Heyo! Welcome in, latest edition of Marler Monday on a Tuesday, live from the offices, he's told me, so no profanity. So this should be our highest rated episode ever.
You're a bunch of fucking losers. kidding. Happy to be here, Michael. How are things?
Hey, how about the Sooners? Just won the national championship. I know you've been all over it. I don't know anything about it, so I just wanted to get your thoughts, because just based on your timeline, it seems like this kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, really incredible run for Oklahoma. If you missed it, Mike, I'll give you the big there we go. The big 30,000 foot view of it. This was the team that finished 11th in the standings in the SEC this year. Why is this part of my hair so far out? What's going on there? 11th in the standings, lost four straight series to close the year. Started out really good, by the way. I had them at number two in my weekly power rankings after the first week of the season. Did not have them there at the end. But no, they lost four straight series to close out the year. They went one and done in Hoover. They lost to LSU, who was like the 14 seed. And just they weren't playing good baseball. Like they didn't pitch exceptionally well. They didn't hit really well. Mike, for power numbers, they hit 48 home runs in their first 46 games. They hit 47 in their final 19. Like, I mean, it was like going to their first
boomer.
10 games, their first 10 games of the college or the postseason before they got to the men's college World Series finals, they hit 26 home runs in those 10 games alone. They were averaging over 9 runs per game. I mean, they had Ryan Williams age freshmen out there just absolutely dealing against teams like Georgia. They beat 3 Power 4 conference champions just to get to the finals, Georgia, Kansas, and Georgia Tech, and did it all the way from home. It was unbelievable, man. It was unbelievable. It was and the way that they did it too. It's a North Carolina team that was set up really well for pitching. They had a ton of rest. They had several guys that were, like that Globner kid. I don't know if you paid attention to him at all, Caden Globner or Globner. I don't know. They were 29-0 when he pitched, and they lit up everybody. I mean, Oklahoma just lit up everybody. And so in the two games that they won, I think that was the more impressive part. Like, you get matched up. They were an underdog in every game. They get matched up with Bama. They beat him like 9-0. They beat Georgia, 4-3, and then they beat the brakes off another game. I mean, they took North Carolina to the woodshed, man. It was unbelievably impressive. It was a really cool story, and I would say in the last 20 years, it's probably one of the three best, if not the best, underdog stories of the entire road to Omaha. I mean, like, you think about Ole Miss in 2022, where they were their backs against the wall, and the whole "Don't let the Rebs get hot" thing with Tim Elko. That was incredible. 2008 Fresno State. Also really cool, but this was tremendous, dude. It was tremendous.
And I know it's what do they say, apples to oranges. You can't really equate the two, but to finish 11th and win it all, that'd be like Kentucky football winning the national championship. That's who I just counted. That's who finished 11th in the SEC last year.
They finished that high?
Yeah.
I mean, not to be a dick, but like, that's kind of crazy. I think what's also interesting too is that like they were 11th in the SEC, but it wasn't like this was like we came out of the gates poorly and started turning it on. It was like you were like, I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to, because I'll just out myself. I remember writing my article when I was previewing the regionals, and it was like, hey, who's got the best chance? It's not a one seed to make it past the first weekend. And my first line was, it's either Oklahoma or Kentucky. And then it was like, ha ha, just kidding. Could you imagine? Because you could make the case that neither of those teams belonged in like the postseason. Like, if it wasn't for February and March's resume for Oklahoma, I don't know if they would have had a leg to stand on. Like, and I shouldn't compare Kentucky, because I think Kentucky had less of a reason to be there than Oklahoma. Like, Oklahoma still had a really good RPI. They were 24th in the country in RPI, 31st in DSR, whatever the fuck that is. And they were a team that built their entire resume to get to the postseason in like March and February. But this is not one of those things where it's like, oh, they just caught fire at the right time, like a 2007 Georgia, or I know they didn't win the Natty, but like some of those teams that like caught fire, or 2012 A&M that was like really seemingly unbeatable at the end. Like, this, they were not a good team, and then all of a sudden it got to regionals, and they were like, yeah, you know what, we'll turn it on now. We'll go on the road and beat Georgia Tech, 15-5 or whatever, like 15-8 or whatever it was, which is like, I mean, like the kid that hit the walk off to send him to Super Regionals was hitting like 230. Like it was just crazy.
So this is 7 national championships in a row for the SEC in baseball.
Yeah.
So I got to ask, are we a baseball conference now?
Always have been. I think why am I hate talking about Oklahoma?
Does the Big Ten suck at baseball?
Yeah, they're terrible. They're fucking terrible.
Yeah, suck it.
But I think the one thing too that's interesting about the Oklahoma thing is or the SEC part of it. Like you talk about the depth of the conference. It's not just the fact that they have like a really like they've won 7 in a row, but it's been 6 different teams. And I think that's the thing that's been so like you make the comments about the 2010s and the SEC where it's like, you know, early on, of course, you have Auburn wins one, then Bama wins a bunch. You have 2019 with LSU, Georgia plays for a couple. Or place for one, I guess. But like the depth of the conference in baseball is just so much deeper. It's incredible.
Hey, and since the last time I think we had you on, it was all Trash and Sorsby. Breaking news for anybody that missed it. The NFL has said, get the hell out of here. They basically suspended him for a year without suspending him. He's not allowed to go into the supplemental draft. At this point, I kind of feel bad for him. Where are you at?
I mean, actions have consequences. I don't want to kick a kid while he's down. It feels like they are probably blackballing him to prove a point and make a example out of. I'll say this, man. You go on a bender and you make a bunch of bets one weekend. That's a tough weekend. You make $90,000 of the bets at $25 a pop. Now we're talking about something altogether that's different. At any point, somebody could have stepped in and shut it down. I think that at any point, I think Cincinnati could have stepped in and shut it down. And I think also, I think the scary part of this is like I'm not saying that either school is more fault or less at fault than the other. I will also say though that it didn't feel like anybody wanted to step in and fix this until it became their problem, like until it affected them. I don't think that he went to rehab for a month and is rehabilitated, stopping gambling. I don't think that handing a kid $5 million who has a gambling problem is a responsible thing to do. Like, I mean, like, you know, I'm sure there's someone in the chat that's like been at not rock bottom. I know Brodo Baggins mom's has, but I mean, like, I don't know if they've been at rock bottom. She was my rock bottom, by the way. But I think that
can you fill us in? How long is a typical rehab stint? I know you've been a couple times.
You can go for a weekend, or you can go for a week. You can go for a couple of weeks, and they're all different in terms of like how intense they are. And I think that a 30-day thing here, it's like, you know, we're going to take my phone, we're going to talk about my feelings, and we're going to explain why I feel this reason of I need to get these bets off, right? But again, you don't hand. Like I don't know the right way to rehabilitate a gambling addict, and I don't have any experience with that. I don't think it's giving him $5 million. I don't think it's giving him $5 million. I don't think that if you were a heroin addict leaving there and being like, hey, just so you know, I know you're trying to get back on your feet, but here's a spoon and a what do you call it, a flame. I don't think that's the best idea either.
Yeah, don't be handing out flames to anybody. That would be my recommendation. You know what?
Yeah. And I don't think gambling addiction is like any other addiction. I don't think that's true. I think it's more prevalent than some things because you can have access to it anywhere. But I don't get the let me rephrase it. I don't think this addiction was handled the same way. And I'm not trying to make light of it because I get what you're saying. It didn't feel like they were making this like a priority, like this, hey, this is serious, man. As much as it was like, hey, he's a good quarterback and we're fucked if we don't get to play him. Like that's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of, hey, I thought you were going to not swear on this one, but speaking of swearing, maybe this will get you going here. So I don't know if you've been paying attention. We've been doing our fall camp preview series. So
no,
I just wanted to run through a couple of these. We've done 6 thus far. I'd like to start with Carolina because you're locked on Cox.
Locked on Cox.
But I said best case scenario, 9-3 with losses to Georgia at home, at Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the other one I had as a loss was at Alabama. So could you conceivably see, again, this is best case. I'm not guaranteeing you Carolina's going to go 9-3, but could you conceivably get to the Gamecocks finishing 9-3 this year?
Yes, 1,000%. It would, it's an uphill battle. I think that when I look at this schedule, I see two games that are losses, and it's Georgia and Oklahoma, and that's it. Like guaranteed losses. I think that there's some games on here that have to go your way. You have to win if you're going to go on a run here. Listen, everyone talks about A&M, about how great A&M is, right? I don't necessarily see that because you're talking about an A&M team that lost 177 starts. They didn't lose 177, but they had 177 combined starts in the offensive line last year across the board. They lose four of those five up front. You lose your best receiver that you've had. You lose the guy who finished second in the SEC in sacks off the edge, right? Like, you don't just replace that and be like, oh, yeah, we're fine. Isaiah Horton's really good. I don't know if Isaiah Horton is going to replace the production at all different aspects in that team that that Mario Crittenden or Casey Concepcion had a season ago. I don't think we've seen a top 10 A&M team go to Columbia and get their ass beat in the last 2 years. It happened in 2024. I just don't think that's a definite loss for them. I think they're going to beat Arkansas. I think they're going to beat Clemson. I think Clemson's going to continue to take a step back, and they're going to show once again that, hey, when you don't have a generational quarterback, things are pretty difficult. This time around, they don't even have a five-star quarterback, which is like the first time they haven't had one of those in since like, what, before Deshaun Watson? Like, I think maybe Taj Boyd or something like that. Like, this is – I know Kelly Bryant started a little bit for him, but it wasn't – you know, they are going to take a step back here as well. We don't know what Bama's going to be. It is on the road, which sucks for him. But I think that you have to win that Mississippi State game and you have to win that Kentucky game to have a chance this season, because I would lean towards Alabama should probably win that game, especially at home. I think it's a night game too, which kind of sucks for Carolina, because it's like you don't get them early. They're in like a sleepy kickoff at 11 a.m. with like the crowd not being super into it. But if you can go on the road and beat a Florida team that you should be ahead of schedule on, like you should be ahead of them, and then Tennessee at home, you're set up for success really, really well. I don't think 9-3 is off the table. I know people think that's crazy, but you don't have LSU. You don't have Texas on this schedule. I think it sets up pretty well for them.
Is it overly simplistic to say Beamer's job and the season is dependent on how well Sellers performs?
Yeah. I mean, like, you need him healthy for the entire year for one.
Yeah.
Like, you mean, think about the past couple of years. Like, I don't think they beat Vandy necessarily if he doesn't go out last year. They lose, I think, like 31-7 that game. But they do beat LSU the year before. I think that you can make that case, and you probably get to the college football playoff if that's the case. I think that he has to have a much better season. I think he will. I think the handcuffs that they had on him and the offense under Mike Shula are all gone. And like, they've made it so much more simplistic with the offense. There's so much more talent around him. I'm going to say it for a third year in a row, and I'm hoping it's the first time I'm right, but it's not like the offensive line can get any worse. That's crazy. Tell me that's not a wine cooler. It is not. I'm at work. So,
Steve has got it as, let's see, the 13th offensive line.
That's generous. That's I do think they're going to be better. I don't think they're going to be that good. I think that you've got to figure out a way to run the football in short yard situations. I think the biggest thing that escaped this team a year ago was that, like, in downs where you needed to be able to run, first down, can you get 3 yards and make it second and seven? Or on second and seven, can you make it third and three? Like downs like that, when you need the ability to run. And then the other thing too, Mike, we've talked about this a bunch, is I don't know what was going on with Shula that he was not willing to run Sellers inside the 10-yard line. It was crazy. And so I think that you're gonna have an offense that's more catered to his skill set. And the other thing here is this. We thought last year on offense they were going to take a step forward. Like, I didn't think the offensive line would be that bad. Jakarius Peak being a plug-and-play guy at left tackle is huge. Like, because at the very least, you don't have to worry about his blind side and constantly being harassed. Like, I think you got better up front. The tight ends will be whatever. I don't think the tight ends are going to be anything to write home about. But, what do you need them for? I think you need them on dump passes on first down to get you 6 yards. I think you need them in some of their size advantages in the end zone. Because I know, like, you know, Mike, what is his name? It's a kid from Hammond High School. He's a tight end. I want to say it's Mike Hart, but I know that's wrong. I always mix this kid up. He was committed to LSU forever. He's from Hammond High School. He ended up going to Carolina. Big kid. He's like 6'6", 245.
I just call him Mikey.
Mikey, big Mike. Him in the short yard situations, I think you're going to be able to have in like the red zone between him and a guy like, you know, now I'm drawing a blank on everyone's name, Mike. Nick Harbor. And then, so I think the size wise, when you get close to, and you get Jaden Gibson from Oklahoma, who's 6'6", like there's vertical threats, there's intermediate threats, and there's also guys that are going to be able to be like, you know, mismatches inside of the 20-yard line. And the biggest thing is last year, I thought you'd see the floor raised from the receivers that were so young that they got from the high school rankings. And it just didn't really pan out. Mazio Bennett disappeared. A couple of other guys that you thought, like, you know, would have a much better season just didn't. They just didn't have a great year at all. You go get Nitro Tuggle from the portal. You go get the kid from UCF who used to be committed to South Carolina. You go get Jaden Gibson if he's healthy, which he hasn't been for the last 2 years, he's going to be good. And then you still have all those younger guys to take the pressure off of Nick Harbor. I think I'm big Meech. So I'm excited for it. I think it'll be really good.
Would you rather, again, jobs on the line, right? Programs on the line.
Yeah.
Would you rather put it in the hands of a Sellers who we know, we've seen it, we know he can do it?
Yeah.
Or would you? I know this is probably a difficult question, but or would you rather put it in the hands of a transfer like Sam Levitt, Byron Brown? I'm trying to think of some, or maybe even at Austin Simmons, or like even Alabama, where they're kind of like not a transfer, but an unknown.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like,
I think
at least Carolina have an advantage because they know this guy can play in this league?
Yeah. I mean, they're one of six teams in the league that have a returning starter at quarterback. Like, I mean, it's him, it's Mateer, it's Arch, it's Chambliss, it's Gunnar Stockton. There's another one that I'm missing, but I mean, it's like, yeah, I think you already are a step ahead if you have that. I mean, I wouldn't put him ahead of Levitt just because I think Levitt is talented, and also Levitt has so much talent around him. And like that, I think, in the offense that he has, like it's hard to argue about like a lane given offense. But I do think Kendall Briles is a guy that's going to be able to scheme up things that are specific to his skill set. And then for whatever reason, now what's weird, Mike, is that we it's not like we are prisoners to being like tethered to like his potential. Like we've had the conversations about like his potential and how good it could be. He could be a first round draft pick. It could be any of those things. Right. It also, we've seen it happen on the field in 2024 in the final six games of the season when he was, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. They were 6-0. They had the longest win streak of any team in the SEC that year. They were on fire, and we saw it when they finally started using things that were in his skill set. Now he had to put on the cape and be Superman every once in a while. But like last year, you saw no help in the run game, right? We saw that. We saw what a difference that was when they had Rocket Sanders and a guy like that. And then, you know, in 2025, there was none of that. And there was also none of the ability to keep him upright and protected. He was running for his life just from the beginning. You know, it was like, I think that the fact that we've seen him do that before, like on the actual field, is a big deal.
Well, I know you are a huge, huge Ole Miss fan, and they love you. So hold on,
real quick. Somebody said, unfortunately, and I like this guy too, so I'm not coming at him. South Carolina is playing what I consider the toughest schedule in the SEC. I think it's the easiest schedule that South Carolina has had in the last, I would say, 5 years. It's not easy, but in comparison to what they have, again, you don't have LSU, you don't have Texas on there. You get A&M at home, you get Georgia at home. Tennessee is a pivotal game. You get that one at home. You know, Clemson is down. Florida has a coaching change. Alabama, 7 of your 10 Power 4 opponents have a new quarterback at the very least that they're breaking in. Several of those also have a new offensive coordinator and or a new head coach they're breaking in. So I think that they're, right, from a scheduling standpoint, it's not easy, right? But it does feel like it is a tough schedule. You're not wrong about this. But it's also not as bad as it's been in previous years.
That's crazy to say, but I think it's accurate. Right? All right, what we know you love Ole Miss. So we did win, loss, toss for Ole Miss. I said best case.
Yeah.
I said 10-2. Again, best case here with losses at Texas and at Oklahoma. That would require winning several toss-up games. I mean, Georgia, you could laugh at that, but and I think Georgia's the best team in the conference, but Ole Miss has played them better than anybody in the conference. Well, LSU. That's
debatable, but I mean.
Well, I mean, how's that debatable?
Well, actually, I guess it's not. They beat them two of the past three times. Only one other team has done that, but.
Right. I guess you're going to say Bama.
Negative 3 yards rushing.
Right. but then again, I don't know what to make of Louisville, but I think that's going to be a really good team this year. And then of course, obviously the huge LSU game, but could you see any world where Ole Miss goes 10-2?
Yeah. I mean, I could, I think you would have to have, I think Trinidad would have to be Johnny Manziel. Go back to your toss thing.
Okay. Toss. I'll toss you any day.
I don't love that. I love the fact that you put toss for Louisville because I don't think we're talking enough about that.
Right. That's game one for Pete Golding. You know, I think it's got to be.
And it's a neutral site. It's a team that wants to make a statement. They've spent a ton of money in the portal over the past couple of years. They're only a 6.5-point underdog. That's the most surprising part to me. And I think that Pete Golding is going to have the team really, really focused for that LSU game and for most of the year. And I love where he's at. Like I love how focused he is on just football, right? Just football. I don't know what the rest of the team is going to do though, because it feels like everyone's talking about that game on September 19th. It could set up something, Mike, where it's like, It could, especially since he's like a Saban disciple, it could set up in a situation where he hits like a perfect start to the year that Saban used to always have, where it's like, all right, well, you win a big neutral site non-con game in week one, and you think you're great, and everyone's patting you in the back, and then you come back the next week and you have some flaws or something like that against Charlotte before you have, you know, I don't think Charlotte's good, but I'm just saying like where you don't come out of the gates as you know, impenetrable. That's not how you say that word. Jesus Christ. What's the word I'm looking for here, Mike? I haven't had enough caffeine today.
Impenetrable.
I really, really am glad you didn't catch me on camera saying it the first time because I wasn't even close. I had a roadblock at the first M.
I know that. I mean, that's what they used to say about your cornhole, but it's no longer impenetrable.
Heard that, brother. So I do think that they are going to be good. I don't think they're going to be nearly as good as everyone thinks, though. Like you lost. I get that you brought the quarterback back, and I think the running back in college has way more value, you know, and like help in being successful than it does in the NFL. there it is. I don't know if that's enough to get through this league when you have Texas and LSU and Georgia and Oklahoma all on the schedule. Do they go back to the schedule?
Let me ask you this doomsday scenario.
Yeah.
I'm not predicting this, but
7-5.
I don't think it's like absolutely insane. Lose to Louisville in Nashville.
Uh-huh.
Lose to LSU at home in like disgrace, you know.
Right.
Lose at Florida. Could they fire Pete Golding during the bye week and promote Joe Judge or something?
No, that's crazy. That I don't think that, because he still
1-3
playoff games. I mean, maybe not. I don't know what his buyout is either. Does anybody?
It's very manageable. And then they just come out and be like, all right, we rushed it. You know, we're going to do a full-on coaching search.
Yeah, and then Kiffin comes back.
Yeah. Full. Then they, that's what all the Ole Miss fans have to love him again.
Yeah, I would love that. Daddy's home. No, I don't think that they would fire him. I don't think they're going to lose that many games right out of the gates. I think they're going to go 3-1 out of the gates.
Ooh.
I don't think they're going to be as impressive as people think. That Florida game is tricky, man, because it's the week after LSU. They are going to lose to LSU. I love the confidence, and I think there's a lot of talent on this team, and there's a lot of good players on that defense, especially at each level that I think are going to be really, really good this year. Perkins is a guy that we don't talk nearly enough about off the edge. I love what they got there. The white kid from Cal and then Clemson that they stole when he was in, home economics class or whatever it was. And they were like, here's a screenshot of what we're going to pay you. See you later. And then Jay Crawford, I think, is like, his ability, you saw his freshman year at Auburn. I think they've got guys at each level of the defense that are gonna be really good. I don't know if they have all of the other talent that they had from a year ago, like to support anywhere close to the season they had a year ago. Like, and most importantly, the guy calling the plays is gone. Like what
Joe Judge was
it? Joe Judge.
We know he was secretly handing them the plays. You know that, don't you?
I mean, that was like, it's so weird the arguments we're allowing ourselves to make at this point. Like, yeah, I mean, sure. Like Kiffin was good, but he wasn't calling the plays. Like, well, all right. Well, Charlie Weiss Jr. was, and he's gone too. Like, I just don't get it. So that, and then also the fact that you have, I think you just lost a lot of last year's talent, but I will tell you this too. I do think that he is going to build a winner at Ole Miss, and they're going to have a sustainable like program that's going to do really well. I just don't know if it's this year, even with how good Trinidad Chambers can be.
Yeah. I hope David Chambers appreciates that analysis.
Yeah, geez Louise dropping actual truth bombs in the chat here.
All right. How about Tennessee? Your favorite here. Yeah. I've got a lot of tosses here. Texas at home, Bama at home, LSU at home, at Carolina.
You don't have a loss on the schedule?
A&M. Hell no, brother. But I did say 10-2, best case scenario. Back to the playoff. I think I gave him a loss to Texas and a loss at A&M.
Okay. I mean, I'm fine with the Bama one. I do think they lose to Carolina. I think they'll beat Tech. I mean, Haynes King leaving Tech that's going to suck for them. They did get Justice Haynes, though. Let's see. I think they lose to Texas. God, they got a front-loaded schedule, huh? They don't have a back-to-back road game? I love that. I don't know. The schedule's not as difficult as you would think.
Pretty well.
That back end in November with A&M on the road and then LSU at home, I think they probably lose at least one of those, probably both. But October, yeah, this is actually a very manageable schedule.
That's what I'm trying to tell people.
They lose to Texas, and they're going to lose to LSU. Can they go 9-3?
At home, LSU?
Yes.
Kiffin doesn't win on the road.
Really good this year, man. They're going to be really good.
I think you're the last one that believes that.
Me?
I forgot who's paying you. We can't.
I hate this so much. It's so like I'm not allowed to have any opinions. Just all of my opinions.
Just not on that one.
They're all compromised. Nah, LSU's gonna be really good, man. They're gonna be really good. I will say that Tennessee, I am higher on them. It'll be interesting to see what the offense looks like with the quarterback situation. Because if you look at the quarterbacks, and you and I have talked about this off air, but we're getting couples massages. But like when you've had a first year starting quarterback in Heupel's system, dating back to when he was an OC at Missouri for Drew Locke. Those quarterbacks have averaged 31 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and like 2,700 yards of offense, like or passing per year. That's really impressive. Like I think that's like a really, really strong case to make for a first year quarterback, even if it is a young guy. The schedule does set up really well. I think the thing that I'm most interested in seeing is the defense going to be good enough for the offense? Because I think Jim Knowles is a great hire. But there, it does take some time sometimes for him to like get his defense to kind of take shape. And I will also tell you
that's why he brought guys and brought assistants this time.
True. And I think that he's a really good coach, and I think it's one of the best hires besides Buster Faulkner. I think it might have been the best hire from a coach just getting a coordinator, like not like Kiffin brought, Charlie Weiss Jr. with him. But I mean, like going out and hiring a guy, I think it was one of the best hires of the entire offseason. That being said, if it does take some time to gel and to figure out, like they still have a true freshman quarterback that's going to go out there, or a freshman quarterback that's going to have to go win them games. That's tough.
Not for Heupel. Hey, shout out Wild Man Carl Jenkins here. First couple of games of the season is like guessing how many jelly beans in a jar. Vols undefeated. Feels like 98.
98. God, that Syracuse game. I still wish I lost that game.
All right. How about your beloved, which I don't even know if we're allowed to say that anymore. Your formerly beloved Tide here. We also had them at, I believe, 10-2 best case. Shane says 11-1. He loves the Tide. Gave him a loss at Tennessee, and I gave him a loss at LSU, I think. Which I know you love that.
They're going to lose LSU, but they've only lost there 6 times since 1957.
Right, which is so confusing is why you always pick, the last 12 months, or not even, why you think LSU is better than Bama now. It's so convenient.
I didn't say that.
It's so convenient really after 30 years of you spouting Bama.
I didn't say that LSU was better last year or the year before. I did say in 2023 I thought they'd win because the offense. Who knew they couldn't stop Jalen Milroe? For Bama, I think you're talking about a 3-0 start. I think you have the potential to get to 5-0, and I think it's going to go off the fucking rails. They're going to lose to Georgia for sure.
Let's rank just these four.
Yeah.
In terms of difficulty, Georgia at home, at Tennessee, A&M at home, at LSU. Rank those 1-4 the toughest for Bama.
Hold on, say it again.
If you could rank Georgia at home, at Tennessee, A&M at home, at LSU. Rank those 1-4 in terms of difficulty for Bama, you think, this season.
Georgia, LSU, A&M, Tennessee. Tennessee and A&M are tied. But here's the thing, too. I don't know if they beat South Carolina. The South Carolinas almost beat them 2 years in a row. And that those are much better, at least on paper, Bama teams. Like,
the same guy that says like DeBoer's like 98-2 in the last 3 years or whatever? Teams.
I don't think South Carolina's gonna be ranked going in that game. Those are just factual things.
You're like, he's the greatest. Now you're like, I don't know if he beat Carolina.
I don't know if his offensive line is gonna be good enough. Like again, it could be a situation where they can't get any worse, and they got some talent. They really do have some talent at the skill position. They're just young, but they're really thin at receiver. They only got like 7 guys there on scholarship, I feel like.
They stopped recruiting, right?
They've got like 2 commits. People get like it's not getting amped up for recruiting in June is fine. To have it be like what you're basing your opinion of how bad their recruiting is, like if you want to get pumped, it's like, man, Kentucky was at like number 4 a couple weeks ago. And it was like, oh, cool for Kentucky. Like, that's not going to hold, but that's awesome. You know, it's cool. Like little moment in the sun here. To sit here and be like, this team sucks, they can't recruit, and it's June, that's always really stupid to me. All right, so back to the schedule.
To be ranked 16th in the conference is pretty bad, right?
They finished second
just
last
that,
year.
That damn A on your chest. 4. You can't be outside the top 12, I don't think.
Sure. I think.
I mean,
think
that's a fireable offense right now, I'd say.
They should fire him right away and pay the buyout. And just, you know, I mean, like he had the 16th ranked recruiting in June, and that's when it ends, I think.
You know who would fix it? Jeremy Pruitt.
Dude, Jeremy Pruitt would be awesome. And I bet he knows what asparagus is now, too. I think that what is this? Hold on. I think that the schedule is like Bama could come out and be really good because I think Keelan Russell is an incredible talent. I think they have arguably, I'm not ready to say it's like the best yet, but I think by the end of the season we're gonna have conversations about it. They might have arguably the best receiving tandem in the country, or I'm sorry, in the conference with Ryan Williams and Lassier Brooks. But I don't know if you're guaranteed that win against South Carolina. And I worry that like if you lose that game to Carolina and you lose that game to Georgia, you don't have a fourth-year senior like Ty Simpson starting at quarterback for you. You got a first-year guy, no matter who it is. Do you have indecision at the quarterback position this year? Like is it somebody that wins the position out of the gates? Because he loves Austin Mack. There's a reason why Austin Mack came with him from Washington. Is that person win the starting job out of the gates and like doesn't look back? Or is it like, hey, he was pretty good. He was 58% and 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Should we go with the other guy and see what it looks like before we get to the meat of the schedule? Or do you have continuity? You know what the offense is going to look like and all that kind of stuff. I think the scary part for Bama is the offensive line was so bad last year. And so you want to look at that and be like, well, can't get any worse, blah, blah. But dude, Mike, think about how bad the offensive line, the inability to run the football, especially in short yardage, close to the goal line, 4th-and-1. We all know about the SEC championship game against Georgia and how bad that was. But I'm telling you right now, man, you think about how bad this offensive line has been.
Stephen's got him 12.
I think that's probably fair. But you think about how bad it's been, and on top of that, they had a top 15 pick at left tackle last year, right? They had Parker Brailsford was a 3-year starter at center, and they had, you know, a right tackle that got paid about $1 million or more to go to A&M, Wilkin Formby, and like, you know, that unit was really, really bad, and you lost the best piece of it. So it's like, I don't know if you're going to all of a sudden just pick it up and be like, yeah, we got a bunch of 3-stars we've been developing into what? Like, I don't know if that's going to be necessarily something that is going to be a strength for them at all. And then if they cannot run the ball again, I mean, are we going to sit here and have to watch fucking DeBoer and Grubb draw up the most incredibly creative 3rd-and-3 4-yard passes for the entire year? Probably not. Like, I don't look forward to that.
Hey, Brodo's got you figured out. Did you just come back from a trip from Turkey? And can you give Shane the name of your doctor?
Is he bald or did he just shave his head?
No, he's bald.
Oh, okay.
But he's considering going to Turkey, but he's got to get under the weight limit, you know?
What would he do in Turkey? What would he get on his head? He's been bald forever.
He'd get a sweet do like yours, man. It's impressive.
Here, yeah, thanks, dude. Especially this part.
How about this? We also have done Missouri.
I don't want to talk about Missouri today. Can we do another team?
And I said best case, 10-2. Okay. Losses at Georgia. And I'm trying to think the other one. I think I said Oklahoma. I can't recall. But point being, I mean, there's, again, I get it. Could be overrating them, right? But if Austin Simmons hits, I think they're going to be nasty on offense. The question for me is how good is their defense? I think that could be a train wreck, but they might be able to outscore everybody. And again, Ahmad Hardy's status looms. I'm assuming he's good to go. I probably shouldn't.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
But for this exercise, I'm assuming he's good to go.
Yeah.
I mean, any shot in hell that this is like this.
No, don't say shot. I mean, I don't think you're – I think they could be a sleeper for sure. I mean, like – I look at the schedule. I think they win the first four. They get Florida at home. I'm just not sold on Florida. Like, I know they have guys, but I don't know. Right. I don't know. Like, I mean, it's still the first year as a head coach. I go back to this too, man. If you're a first year head coach of the SEC, like we have talked. This counts for Golding. This counts for Summerall. This counts for Golish. Like, I think
everybody but Kiffin.
Everyone but Kiffin. We've seen coaches that have like a really good start. Mike Elko had a great start, right? But then there's always at some point where Mike Elko runs into Auburn, who's dog shit, and they go to 4 overtimes and lose. And, you know, and then they kind of like backslide off the end of the schedule. Saban did it in year one in 2007. Kirby did it in 2016 with Georgia. Like, it just, there's very few coaches that go into this league and they're just like, yeah, we're going to dominate right off the bat. And, like, I wouldn't even count Sark because Sark is at a school that had, like, you know, the number one overall player in the country at quarterback. They had, and then also the number one overall player in the country at backup quarterback and, like, all these, like, amazing stars everywhere. It's just very hard to go into a season where you're just able to be much better. I think Missouri and Mississippi State are interesting. And there's a couple other ones I'd throw in there. But those – Kentucky is probably one of them. But Kentucky and Mississippi State, like, I think those two are going to jump up and get somebody this year that's not expecting it. I don't know if that means that their ceiling changes from 5 wins to more than 7. You know what I mean? Like, I don't right. know. Like, because this the amount of talent on the roster plus the schedule itself, like, I just don't know if that's any different. Now, I will tell you that for a team like Missouri, the way their schedule sets up, it's a lot easier. And, you know, like, dude, what does Ole Miss look like by October 17th? Are we sure that they're going to be still in contention? They've got Texas the following weekend, right? Like, are they going to – that's a great trap game. You know, there's – you could still look at this for A&M – or, I'm sorry, for Missouri. There's a reason why Lane Kiffin thought that Simmons was the starter a season ago. Like, I mean, the talent is clearly there. The arm talent especially. And everyone raved. I remember being at the Sugar Bowl on the field before the game against Georgia, and he was still taking them out of the tunnel. Like he was still the guy that was going to take them out of the tunnel, leave them on the field, and he was a leader for him. So I think that is, I think it'll be very interesting to see what that looks like.
Now you said, what if Kentucky and Mississippi State? You think they're capable of like upsetting teams, right?
I think Mississippi State and Kentucky will get somebody. I mean, Mississippi State upset last year with Texas.
What if they both get the Kentucky? Same somebody?
Alabama.
Yeah, both on the road. Yeah. I mean, how quick are you? And that's before the four-game hellacious slate.
I do think that the sliding doors for Alabama this year is a lot bigger. I think that Alabama, like last year, no one thought they were going to go 10-2 last year, right? I mean, especially if they lost to Florida State, no one thought they were going to go on the road and beat Georgia. But again, do you think about last year's team and the pieces you had of last year's team? Quay Rousseff gone, James Smith gone, Deontay Lawson, a bazillion year starter gone, Justin Jefferson gone. The secondary is awesome. Bitch, have you been to a Waffle House? Like, can you imagine how much? We gotta work on these jokes, guys. If we're gonna fire them off, I mean, just get fucking better. So I think that there's a lot of questions. Like, I mean, like, dude, you're like, I kept saying this to you, and I almost didn't want to say it because I didn't want people to catch on to it. But it's like, there were so many moments last year on Bama's defense where I was like, someone just run the fucking ball down their throat. Like they will not be able to stop it. Like Indiana did it finally, but it was like Georgia should have won that first game against them if they would have just run the football down their throat because they could not. There were times when that defense was getting gashed for 5, 6, 7 yards. And I don't mean like by that midget quarterback from Florida State that's just like, you know, running around in Gus Malzahn's offense. I mean like running backs will run over them. But then you got to Missouri. And it was like, yeah, it was like, you know, that's a really bad matchup because they can pound the ball to Ahmad Hardy. And then you look up in the fourth quarter and Ahmad Hardy has 11 carries. And you're like, why doesn't he not have 20 carries? Like, what is happening right here? I don't know if that defensive line got better. I know they got some good pieces, but I don't know if the depth is there. I mean, I don't.
Starting a rumor that Ahmad got shot prior to that Bama game?
I'm not at all. As somebody that's been shot before, I would not make that joke.
Hey, well, you know what else is not a joke? So this is the last one that we have thus far. We still got a lot of previews to go. But to Georgia. So I said 11-1.
As the ceiling?
As best case.
Okay.
I just don't think anybody's going 12-0 in this conference ever again.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. And I think I gave them the loss at Bama because Bama, outside of that SEC championship, has kind of owned their ass. Much.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll happen again this year. I don't see that happening. That is going to be a tough day for Bama fans.
How about at Ole Miss, Oklahoma? I think Oklahoma. I think that's. I don't know why no one's talking about that game. I think Oklahoma, Georgia. I think that's the best game in the conference this year.
I think it's one of them. It's interesting because it's so early in the season. Like, I'm trying to think of who else plays that day. I think LSU plays A&M that day. Bama has South Carolina that day.
And Tennessee, Texas. Yeah,
that's a pretty good day of football, huh? Mm-hmm. Let's see here. What is this? That's about Manning. I'm with you on the Manning thing. I think he's going to be a lot better. No, I think you're right about Georgia and Oklahoma being a really good game. I don't think – I mean, first off, Georgia, Florida being played in Atlanta's. I'll get canceled for what I want to say about that. That's so fucking stupid. Almost on the road. I don't think that's going to be tough. The Carolina game could get tricky. I mean, but Tech is going to be at home. Missouri, like that November on paper, at least, I think it's going to be pretty good for them. And I think Carolina's going to be good. I don't think Carolina's good enough to beat Georgia, especially at that point in the season where it's like Kirby has everyone locked in, like, you know, what they're working towards. They don't get Texas. They don't get LSU. They don't get Texas A&M. I mean, you get Oklahoma at home. You get a revenge game against Ole Miss, which I'm sure Kirby's just licking his chops about. You all know the story about Arkansas or about Alabama. That's a great schedule, man. You only have four true road games. Your other true road game is in Atlanta against a team that you own. I mean, so that's a really easy schedule, man. That's a really easy schedule for them.
What would be the best case you think in your – could they go undefeated?
12-0, yeah. Yeah, I mean, dude, here's the thing too. Kirby Smart never wastes a loss. And the loss that they had – I'm going to fix my hair because I feel like you're going to clip this. Start it over. 3, 2. Here's the thing, man. Kirby Smart never wastes a loss. And here's the other part of it, too, is that I think that I think that the schedule just sets up so nice for them. And I think this is going to be the best Georgia defense that they've had since 2021. I think the defensive line is going to be able to rotate bodies that are elite at getting like to the quarterback. I think they're going to be really, really good in the middle of that defensive line. I think that they always have like I don't even know who the starter is going to be in the middle of that defense at linebacker. I guarantee you he's going to be a fucking Butkus winner in the next 2 years, or at least a finalist for the award. The secondary with KJ Bolden going into a third year, Ellis Robinson the fourth going into his third year, some of the elite talent they have at the corner and safety position, I think they're going to be really, really good there. I just think, again, and you don't have Texas staring down at you. At the very least for Georgia, because I don't think Georgia fears Texas at all, nor should they in any sport, really. But I think that if you're Kirby Smart, like, you just don't even have the buildup for that game. Like, there's not even a game on that schedule that you have to be like, oh, man, we got to really lock in and focus for, like you want to be focused for all of them. But there's not one that's going to, like, emotionally or mentally drain you because of how much, like, you know, outside noise will be surrounding that game. Like I mean, that schedule, that is, it is lacking in firepower from an opponent's standpoint. Georgia is going to be the best equipped team to go undefeated in this year, specifically because of not just their roster, but because of the schedule as well. There's not a road game on there that should be super scary. And then with the Ole Miss thing, you get the revenge factor. I mean, South Carolina, there's a case to be made that South Carolina is I'm not going to say that because I'm not
biggest sleeper in the conference.
I think so for sure. But I think also in that game, it's just interesting because like I think that's also it could be a must win for Carolina at that point if they still have hopes of getting into the college football playoff. But I think the Bama Georgia game, that'll be fun for a first half. I think Kalen will come out with some oop-de-doop plays and stuff like that. But I just think that what you're going to see this year from Kirby is going to be so much more similar to 2022 and the 2021 team, which is like just joyless murder ball. We have Nate Frazier. We have the best offensive line we've had in the last couple of years. We're going to run the ball down your fucking throat. We have adequate enough receivers to get the ball to. And oh, by the way, even though the receiver position is so, in my opinion, there's zero star power in that receiver room as of right now, right? There's no Zachariah Branch. Who's the guy that went to Texas after he was so good at there's no A.D. Mitchell. There's not a Brock Bowers, but dude, there's four Oscar Delps on this team. Like there's the tight end position is absolutely loaded. They've got physical freaks and like unicorns all over there. Like the Elias Williams kid or Elysius. I don't know if that's his name or that's the general from the Civil War. That kid is a matchup nightmare. I mean, they've got so much talent and so many toys to play with on offense. They're gonna be really good.
Carl wants to know, are you juicing or has finally puberty hit?
Oh, juicing, shit. Baby.
Is that how you're hitting all them dingers?
I've been back in the gym for like 2 months, dog. There you go.
You're looking good.
Love it. Appreciate it. Appreciate anything, it, big dog.
Anything standing out from all your outstanding deep dives on LouisianaSports.net of the one thing to know about the SEC teams?
There's probably something. Anything
surprise you?
I mean, some of the schedules, I think it's hard not to look at the schedule and think that like some of these teams are going to be like able to, it's not a cakewalk. Like, I mean, but look at Texas's schedule versus Georgia's. I mean, like you remember a couple of years ago when Kirby went up there and they beat Texas in the SEC championship game and he just like yelled at Greg Sankey and he goes, "Y'all sent us on the road all year long." still one of the funniest moments ever. I mean, that just, God, what a promo he cut. And so I think that this schedule is much tougher. I will tell you this. I don't think like there may not be a team that goes undefeated. I think this is the year the SEC does end that drought. I mean, they're at least going to play for a national title. I think there's so much talent in Texas and Georgia. I think LSU with the way that they have their roster is built and the play caller they have. I mean, because dude, here's the thing. Like 8.5. I mean, fucking hammer LSU. I mean, hammer LSU. Like, it's the schedule's tough because I think that Texas game is the game of the year. Besides the Ole, I know the Ole Miss game. If it wasn't for just the animosity between those fan bases and the offseason weirdness between them, that game would not be talked about nearly as much as LSU Texas would be, or Oklahoma Georgia, in my opinion. So I think the schedule sets up well for them. I think they're going to at least get to 9 wins. And I think this is going to be an offense. It's going to be a ton of fun, man. Like the defense itself or the offense itself, I don't see it struggling to put up 20 to 30 points a game because we've never seen a Kiffin offense do that, like at least consistently. And the defense that they have in place, man, there's just studs everywhere. They're really, really good. Ty Benefield's going to be really good at the safety position. I think that secondary is going to be really, really good and talented as well. And you think about it, it's not even just the, hey, you know, like, I mean, they could struggle at the edge rush and defensive line because of how like the youth there. And I think outside of Umam Nielen, which I think I just fucking nailed that name, by the way. Outside of Umam Nielen, I don't know if they have somebody that's going to consistently get to the quarterback. I mean, like Jordan Ross is on paper a really good prospect, former 5-star, but I think he only had like 1 sack last year, and Tennessee was like willing to let him go. That's got to be
a Chaz Coleman. Good move, hype.
Attaboy. I think that LSU's going to be really good this year, man. I think.
Well, I was surprised, Steven. So he rated all the defensive position groups. Yeah. He's got LSU number 2 linebackers in the SEC.
Yeah.
He's got them LSU number 4 D line in the SEC.
Defensive
backs 4th. So
yeah.
Fourth or better in every position group.
RCLMX159 says A&M's going to kick LSU's ass again at their house. You know, I get it. Huge win last year. Huge win for you last year. I don't know if A&M should poke the bear so much. I mean, this is a program that you can't find a way to get out of like your own big brother shadow, even in a down year for them. It was your first win in Death Valley, I think, since at least the last 14 years. I don't know if that's what's going to happen.
It looked like the Maroon Valley last year.
It did, brother. And it was a great win. It was a great win in 2025. But now I got a calendar over here. There's nothing written on it because I'm not a real professional, but it says 2026 on it. That's good, brother. That's good. I think that A&M is going to be really good under Mike Elko. I think that what he's doing, especially in the recruiting side of things, he is going to build a very, very long-lasting winning program at A&M. They are going to get their ass beat in Death Valley this year.
DeBoer should call Elko and ask him how he's recruiting so well. Give some tips.
I think it'll be all right, man. It is June. But I will tell you that I'm not used to seeing – like they got a 3-star edge rusher from Great Atlanta Christian today, which is right off what is the name of it? Indian Trail Road, which is where I used to live in Lilburn, Georgia. And they got a kid. It was like he chose Alabama over Stanford and Rutgers. And you're like, God, Jesus Christ. Over Stanford and Rutgers. In what sport?
Please, I mean, those are academic juggernauts.
Yeah. So I did enjoy Cocaine Bear. Great movie. Great movie. But yeah, Are you in that one? Yeah. It's about me. LSU plays LSU in Death Valley, noon game, blow up the Tigers. They did do that.
Yeah.
They did in 2022.
I remember it.
That's right. That was a much different team. But you're right. They did do that in 11 a.m. start time against a much worse LSU team and the best Tennessee team maybe since 1998 that also did not win a national title and then gave up so many touchdowns to South Carolina they ran out of fucking fireworks. But that's neither here nor there.
Hey, why you got to bring that up?
He brought it up first.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, hey, anything else before we close this one out?
That's all I got, man.
How about Kentucky schedule?
The priest today.
Is it a conversion type meeting?
No, I'm not gonna do that ever. For so many reasons that I'm not gonna talk about on air because I don't know if the priest has the internet and I don't want him to say that your marriage is invalid because of your beliefs with the Catholic faith. But I will say, we're doing it's like premarital stuff, so we have to go to talk with the priest at 4. Should be a blast.
Announce your sins or whatever?
I don't think that's a good idea for anybody. maybe we'll just do that on here. I'll just forward him the tape. Hey, man, here's some game film this week about me sinning. It's just my tweets and then this. perfect.
All right, buddy. Hey, before you go, tell the cousins how to follow you and find all your work.
No. See you next week. All right.
We'll be back in a couple hours with Cousin Shane. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.